Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 21st of Kislev. Today we're going to start with the Titiliezri as a brief tshuva about the height of Mechitza, and that will lead us into other interesting issues of Mechitza discussion, as well as then we'll get to a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein about Mikvah, which will push us in the opposite direction, which is part of why I thought it was interesting. It's a brief tshuva on the Titiliezri from the 21st of Kislev of Tuf Shin Nun Gimel, which was 1992. So this was like a 76-year-old man, but still fully in the strength of his days, as far as you can tell from his tshuvot. This is from volume 20, responsive number 7, talking about the making a mechitza in a shul and how opaque it has to be and how tall it has to be. So he says it has to be. So he's writing to a rav who is the rabbi of the neighborhood of Armon HaNetziv in Yerushalayim. And he's giving him a brief tshuva. He says he's spoken about it previously in the 7th volume of Titiliezer, response number 8. One of the interesting things I've noticed about the Titiliezer is that he seems to have not only an encyclopedic memory in general, but an encyclopedic memory of his tshuvot as well, meaning he will often refer somebody back to his previous tshuvot, and I think it means that he remembered where he had written what, and he knew exactly how to look it up and know where it was. I think. I'm not sure. Anyway, the obligation to establish a mechitza, he points out, comes from a Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. And I don't know if it's Amud Aleph, Daf Nun Aleph, where the Gemara talks about, or Mishnah there talks about, the fact that as soon as the first day of the holiday of Sukkot was over, they would start preparing for Simachot Beit HaShoeva, right? The rest of Sukkot, they'd have these big celebrations as they would do in preparation for the Nisuch HaMayim, for the water libation that they did only on Sukkot as part of their prayers for a good year of for plentiful rain that year. So the Mishnah there says that they would make a mitachnin, they would go to the Ezrat Nashim, to the area where both men and women were allowed in the Beit HaMikdash. It was a courtyard where everybody was allowed. And they would mitachnin sham tikkun gadol. They would make some great ordinance or great improvement or a great action to take in order to produce a great result. So the Gemara there says, what was it? They would make a balcony, they would build a balcony, and they would have it, the women would sit up top, and the men would sit on the bottom. And that was the great thing that they did to make sure that the Simchaot Beit HaShoeva went off in the appropriate way. And the Rambam, the Perash Mishnayot there says, Sheit Kinu, there's a quote to the Perash Mishnayot, which says, Kedesh lo yistaklu ha'anashim ba'anashim. So the men shouldn't, now, it'll come up later, so I might as well mention it now, that the definition of, there's a difference between yistaklu and yabitu, or, right, so yistaklu has an implication of staring, of really looking to take, to evaluate, to take stock of. So the worry is, men are, perhaps women too, but in halacha, men are assumed to be much more visually stimulated in terms of thinking about what we would call inappropriate thoughts of the possibilities between men and women, and that is something that certainly shouldn't occur. It really shouldn't occur any time, but especially shouldn't occur at an event that's supposed to be filled with sanctity, with the joy of celebrating the Nisuch HaMayim, the libating of the water before Hashem. So in the Gemara and the Mishnah, they made this, they built this structure just for those times, so the women could attend and be there and be part of it and watch what's going on, just like most of the men would be watching what's going on. But that there wouldn't be any inappropriate, now it's not just interaction, the Sitzelius are pointing out, the Rambam is talking about Kadesh Lo Yistaklu, talking about being able to see it, to look at. So if the women were up top, then the assumption was the men wouldn't really look up top, and it's possible the way it was structured, they couldn't even really easily at all look up top. So the Sitzelius says that. You see that it's not just you didn't want mixed seating, that's one problem, but it's more than that, you wanted to avoid any kind of hystaklu to being able to see it. If you look at the Tosas Yom Tov on the Mishnayot there, the Titiliezer says that it's because hystaklu eventually leads to kalut rosh, to inappropriate thoughts, to levity, to not handling things with the solemnity and religious solemnity and religious fervor that's appropriate to these occasions. So you learn from that, Kimididata Mechitza, the standard then, if that's where the source of Mechitza is, then the proper height for the Mechitza should be until the point that they can't look at women. Right? If that's the standard, then that's the standard. And he points out there was a sefer called Lev HaIvri, which was which has a psak din there signed by over 70 rabbanim, who said that if you have a machitza, you can't make a machitza. The machitza has to be at a height where men could not look at the women, could not be mistakel, and if they have built it lower than that, you shouldn't even go in. So this just seems to agree with that psak, and so how high that should be, he says if that's the standard, then it should be the height of an average man, which he says is about 3 amot and a half. So depending on how you figure an amah, right, an amah is a big topic of debate, but let's assume for a second, if an amah is only 18 inches, which is the lower end of the range, then that would mean 3 amot would be, 3 amot and a half would be 63 inches, would be about, so would cover, even fully cover, women of 5'3". If you have taller women than that, it's more than that. It's also interesting because he says that's the height of Gova Ish, but it's really only the height of Gova Isha, pretty much as an average. You could argue that an average woman is 5'3". Now, if the average woman is 5'3", and the Makitza covers that, then even if she's standing up, you can't see her. It could be the situation thinks that even if you have a woman who's 5'7", so you could see 4 inches, and that's not significant enough. But that's the number that he gives. That's the reasoning that he gives, that we want the men not to be able to be mistakel banashim. They shouldn't be able to look at the women. And he comes up with 5'3". That's not the only way of looking at it, however. That's one standard. The Sri Deish in volume 1, response to number 8, also was asked about the Gova and Mechitza. This is a tshuva not from the 21st of Kislev. It's from 1961, from the 13th of Tammuz, and he's written from a man, it's the rabbi of Kilat Montevideo be Paris. So I think that means there was some shul called Montevideo, because Montevideo is really actually in Uruguay. I looked it up. I didn't know it on my own, but it's in Uruguay. So this I think is a shul in Paris. And the man writing him is a rav there, and he's been complaining to the Sri Deish, and he says, I'm sorry. The Sri Deish says, I'm sorry that it's causing you so much heartache. I feel the distress of being a teacher and a mechanic and an educator, and you see an issue and you're trying to deal with an issue, and then people who are orthodox, people who care about Torah and mitzvot, get in your way, even though they have no understanding whatsoever of education, and they don't know what the values of education are and how it's necessary to educate people, and they come and yell at you for what you're doing, and we're going to get to what he's doing in a second, and they yell at you as if you're not an observant Jew, you don't care about Torah and mitzvot, when really what you're trying to do is, and through the issues, and certainly you're right about this, that we need to find ways to educate the next generation, and that finding ways to engage the younger generation in Tefillah B'Tzibur, in getting to daven together as a group, and that will pull them to other things of observance. In other words, this man, we'll see what he's doing in a second, but this man is doing whatever he's doing because he thinks that's the necessary step to get a younger generation that is not so connected to Torah and Mitzvah to draw them in. If only I could draw them into a group davening from the experience of a group davening, like beginners minyanim have been doing in the United States since around the 1960s, right? You draw people in for a davening, you draw them into a community, and not draw them in, because this is an avenue that opens people up to seeing what we believe in and think of as the truth of Torah and mitzvot and the beauty of being part of the religion. That's what this man is trying to do. He's getting problems from the frumma around them, right? From the people around them who think he's doing the wrong thing, and they don't realize the importance of doing this. And Sidayesh is well known for having been makil on certain issues for exactly these kinds of reasons. He's the source of the idea that you can have men and women sing together in, group events, not like as a choir necessarily, but even possibly also that, but the point of that you can sing together because that'll be part of the educational process. There's all sorts of kulot that I always grew up hearing in the name of the Sri Deish. He was a much broader thinker than just those kulot, than just those legacies, but he was clearly somebody who was sensitive to the need to bring in people and teach them and get them closer to observance. Okay, but it's not still going to work in favor of this rabbi in this situation. So even though he is anxious and concerned about the continuation of Torah for this generation and helping the younger people in Paris that he's coming into contact with find their way to Torah mitzvot, and the people who are against him are just like, well, we'll just have, you know, they speak about it. He speaks about a minyan hamitzumtzam. We'll speak about a small little group of people. We'll have a small little minyan. We'll have 10 people, and the kids will go off and do what they want. We won't care about them, and we'll do what we'll do. And they're not paying attention to the pressing needs of the Jewish people. So the Sri Deish is certainly very alert to and sensitive to the struggles of this man. However, he says, it gets complicated because you want to do things for educating these students, these kids. They may be young kids, they may be teenagers, but you want to educate them. I think it's these are kids, and you want to educate them in a certain way. The problem is, there's a Gemara in Chagiga that says, Abaye says, in any situation that a gadol, an adult, is chayav mida'oraita, is obligated in an issue on a Torah level, Katan nami michanchinan le midirabanan. At a rabbinic level, we are supposed to raise our children to know about those mitzvot, to be ready to observe those mitzvot, which I'm just going to add in, which has many aspects to it. There's the technical knowledge of what to do. There's the comfort with doing those actions. And then there's also the connection to wanting to do those actions, which is perhaps sometimes the most complicated form and aspect of chinuch. But the point that the Sri Deish is deriving from this Gemara, because the one that goes says, and also where the gadol is patur midoraita, where the gadol is not obligated, the adult is not obligated at the Torah level, then there's no obligation derabanan at a rabbinic level for the child. So he says, Chazal have taught us, therefore, and I've seen this in Rav Moshe Feinstein as well, an important principle of Jewish education, which is that when we teach kids to do things, you can't teach them to do it in ways that are prohibited to adults. That was why I think many years ago I saw Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's about co-education, where Moshe says you can't have co-education, not because I think it's such a problem necessarily, but because when you get to be an adult, he thought it was a problem. Different topic, we can talk about another time. But if it's a problem once you get to be 15, let's say, or 14, then it's a problem when you're 9 or 10 as well, because you can't have chinuch that teaches kids to do things wrong. That's not chinuch. So you could say, therefore, Sri Deish says you can't, in trying to educate kids, do anything in their education that makes a special service or a special ceremony in a different way than it would be done when they get to be adults, because you want to do it in the way they're going to do it with adults. That's, I think, a very complicated question to what he means by that. I think here he means, he's going to mean the structure of a shul, if it's a structure that would be unacceptable when they got older, we're not allowed to make it that way when they're younger. There's all sorts of other examples where you might think that you could do things, meaning, is it clear that if you have six-year-olds, they have to daven the entire davening? So I'm not sure what the Sri Deish would say, but that's not a question of prohibition. So here, the question is, this rabbi, now we find out, had decided to arrange the kids in a group with no mechitza, with the boys in the front facing forward and the girls behind them facing forward. But the mechitza is not there. Now, I know of situations where there are women who wouldn't like that either, would find that no better than a mechitza. But apparently in 1961 in Paris, in this shul, that was the way he thought that it would be effective and the kids wouldn't be bothered by it, wouldn't be upset about it. But the Sri Deish is saying, but if that's a prohibited configuration for a shul for adults, then part of our educational system, and this is an important educational point, that Jewish education does not allow doing things for kids that are completely prohibited for adults. And I think that there's an educational philosophy there that we don't always pay as much attention to as we could. So in our situation, could you have adults like that? Meaning, even if we don't have adults like that, if it's not prohibited to them, then you may make the argument, this is something we don't tend to do for adults, but for kids, we're allowed to do it, and therefore, or it's not a prohibition, therefore we do it. So, Tzidkiyah says, but unfortunately, it's not true. We have firm psak in halacha, going back, you know, a while, that mechitza is absolutely obligated, as absolutely necessary. He points out that the Maharam Shik was asked by a Rav, by a rabbi, who was in a community where, just pause to say that Maharam Shik was a 19th century Hungarian Rav. So he's born in 1807, passed away 1879, and this is relevant because he's living in a time when reform is making its way into Hungary as well. And he was asked about a shul where the community says to the rabbi, listen, we don't want a mechitza. We think we can't stand a mechitza. Mechitza is, you know, old stuff. We don't hold of it. And we want to put pillars instead. So these pillars aren't going to be a full wall, a full mechitza, but there'll be a separation. And they think that should be good enough. And they said, and if you don't do it, we're going to go open our stores on Shabbos and we'll just leave. You know, we'll vote for with our feet and we'll just leave. And the Maharam Sheikh says you can't allow such a thing. This is a question that comes up in many other ways, to greater and lesser extents, of how much do you yield to threats like that? And that question of yielding to threats comes up, unfortunately, way too often in halacha. And this is an example of it. They're blackmailing him. They're extorting. They're saying, listen, your choices are, give us what we want or we're leaving. The Maharam Sheikh says you can't give them what they want. And even if they do it, you gotta leave it. And he points out to halacha that we've seen together, I forget in which context, we've seen together, that the Ramah says that if somebody is chayav in nidui, in shunning halachically, and says, well, if you put me in nidui, I'm leaving the religion, we do it anyway. So the Maharam Sheikh said that as well. And so therefore, you gotta do it. And even if the person's, God forbid, gonna leave the religion, We have to do in those situations. Now, you have to check. So mechitza is an example. There might be, you know, in the cases of chayav and nidui, you have to be really, really chayav and nidui, really, really obligated and nidui before you have to invoke that issue. So that's a topic of its own. But now, so coming back to the mechitza question, in other words, you have to have a mechitza. So how tall does the mechitza have to be? Because once you're going to make a mechitza, let's say, for these kids, you want to make it as low a mechitza as possible, at least so it's as unobtrusive as possible. So the Tridiyeh says, you know what, that's already been a debate. Noldam machloket ba'America. It's a debate that occurred among the poskim in America, which is kind of interesting because it's like, I don't know if it's what American Jewry should be proud of, but it's one of their contributions to the world of Torah. Moshe Feinstein held that 18 tefachim was good enough. 18 tefachim is 3 amot, and we'll see that in Rav Moshe in a second, because I would have thought 3 amot would be about 54 inches, because an amma is generally thought of as being about 18 inches. Some people hold an amma is 24 inches. That's like the higher end of the range of what people think about what an amma is, and that would then make it 72 inches, which is 6 feet. So we'll see what Moshe says in a second. But he says, 3 amma, 18 tefachim. And then the Tridiyeh says, and what he means is, just below the shoulders. Below the shoulders means that you'd be able to see if a woman's standing up, her neck and her head. So the Shidish says that the reasoning is, we'll see Rav Moshe in a second, the reasoning is really that they don't come lekalut rosh, that they don't end up interacting too much. They don't end up talking to each other. It's a break that makes it clear to us that we're supposed to be separate for the course of tefillah, and even though it's possible to be mistakel. That's the reason the Shridesh is quoting in the name of Moshe Feinstein. It's based on a Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, where the Rambam says it was the Ezra's Dashi and the women in the time of the Simchat Peres Shueva, it had a fence around it so that they could see from on top and the men would be on the bottom, and then they wouldn't be mixed. So that sounds like the remotion. To the Shridiyesh, it sounds like the point is that if we separate them so they're not mixed, they'll know to behave properly. Whereas the Satmar Rebbe, Shridiyesh says, along with all of the Hungarian rabbis, which would explain the Maharam Sheikh that we just quoted a second ago, that the mechitza has to be tall enough that it's above the heads of, now I think it means above the heads of the women. We saw that Tzitz Eliezer, when he was passing in 1992, right, on the 21st of Kislev of Tavshin and Gimel, when he was passing, he also said it should be above the heads, and then he gave a standard that seemed to be above the head of the average woman's height of 5'3". So today, if women are taller, you might have to say that through the Ezer would have wanted the mechitz to be tall enough that when, you know, the average or most women stood up, you couldn't see them. Because they thought the issue was he's stuckled of being able to see them. So the Ezer, however, says that he thinks that Moshe Feinstein's view is, he says, more correct and more clear. And then he knows that Rambam and the Pesach Mishnah that Tzitz Eliezer quoted, which the way the Rambam did speak about his stucklut, about not being able to look at the women. So he says, I think the way to read that is, I think he means, especially based on what we see of the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah, is that you don't want those people who are insensitive, his word is pritzim, insensitive to Jewish values, you don't want them to be mistakel. So if you have a mechitza of 18 tefachim, of 3 amot, so you're not going to have kalut rosh, you're going to have a lot of interactions. Once you don't have interactions, you don't have to worry that during the time of davening, somebody would lose such, note his assumption about people, that somebody would lose such sight of the occasion, of what's going on, of how they should be approaching it with a kovet rosh, with an appropriate attitude, of what it means to talk to Hashem. So that's good enough. In other words, Rav Moshe Feinstein, he's saying, 3 days he's saying that Rav Moshe Feinstein holds, and he agrees that the point of the mechitza is to create the separation, to create an atmosphere. And that separation only has to be tall enough that it is enough of a reminder to make sure that people don't interact regularly, or perhaps at all, such that they know they're supposed to be stay separate. Once they do know that, then the issue of men making sure to look over at the women should be dealt with as well, because they know that they're not supposed to be doing that. They know that they're supposed to be involved in the tefillah. That's what the Shri Deish has to say. So once he's brought up Rav Moshe Feinstein, let's look a little bit at the Rav Moshe Feinstein. So in volume 1 of the Orach Chaim section, in response of 39, Rav Moshe also says, in the mechitza that goes, he says, Adacharak Tefayim, the Shri Deish said, Lemata min Aktefayim, which sounded like it was just below the shoulders. But Rav Moshe's language to me seems to mean acharak tefayim, above the shoulders, shemistaber shein lavoli de kalut rosh, because that's enough. It's reasonable to assume. Note also that's a question in halacha in general. The Tzitz Eliezer, who by the way didn't quote Rav Moshe Feinstein on this, even though I'm pretty sure he would have seen Rav Moshe Feinstein, and also didn't quote the Shri Deish on this, and I'm not sure if he would or wouldn't have seen the Shri Deish, but he doesn't quote them. He just tells you what he thinks the splak is based on his issues. It could be that he was politely ignoring them because he thought they were wrong. I just did a quick check, and since Ezra does quote the Shri Deish, he doesn't quote them more often, but he does quote the Shri Deish, so I think he probably had seen this responsum when he wrote in the 1990s, and yet he doesn't quote it. So I think it might be him being politely remaining silent rather than arguing, taking up the argument, but I'm not sure. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying that once you reach a height where it's reasonable to assume that people will get the message, that's good enough. So he says that's 3 amot, which is 15 tefachim, which is, I'm sorry, 18 tefachim. And even though at 18 tefachim, when women stand up, you can see their heads, it doesn't matter. That's not going to be enough to bring kalut rosh, to bring inappropriate levity, to bring interactions that will lead us away from the proper atmosphere of davening. He says if people want to make the mechitza higher until the point that you don't see women even when they stand up, that's even better. But that's not, he thinks, a requirement. And remember, when he's writing these kinds of tshuvot, it's in a time when building any mechitza was a challenge. So he's trying to say, this is what the halacha says. You want to do better, there's a room to do better, but this is what the halacha says. In a later tshuva, in volume 4, response number 32 of the Orach Chaim sections in his tshuvot, on the 22nd of Tammuz of Tufshin Lamed Vav of 1976, so he talks about a latticework mechitza. So he says he thinks that's okay. And the reason why he thinks it's okay is because the holes are small enough that you can't create a kalud rosh there. So in other words, because for him, the point of the mechitza is to separate men from women and to stress to both sides of the mechitza that they're not supposed to be interacting with each other. So latticework, even though you can see, you might even be able to push things through to each other on it, he still thinks that the holes are small enough that if you have huge, big holes in it, it's just sort of decorative, there's just a break with lots of, and there's easy passing things back and forth. You know, you could put a kid through the hole of a lattice work, that would probably be a problem for the Moshe Feinstein. But the question he was asked, I think what he's saying is that if it's a small, it's lattice work, it's got holes in it, but they're very small, he thinks that's not a problem, that's not an issue, because it achieves the same purpose as what he understands the purpose of the mechitza to be. Then he says, in the height of the mechitza, he says, from where women are standing, because sometimes you have the women would be sort of raised up, and that would mean that therefore you'd think that you can have a lower mechitza from their perspective, right? Because you can't see them as well. But he says, Makom she'anashim omdot, hu lo pachot mishishim inches. It's got to be 60 inches. It's an odd thing because he says 60 inches, even though he says 3 amot, which means that Moshe Feinstein held an amot was 20 inches, which is not a well-known option within the things. But that's what he really held. He says it in a couple of places, and he says, and if you can do it, he says, that the women who come to shul, who are married, cover their hair, That would be even better. Even if they don't cover their hair elsewhere, it's better because in shul, then you'll have all this, it'll help that if any man happens to see them, they'll also remember these are married women, you should be looking at married women, and all those kinds of things. So that is the mechitza discussion. So even though Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Sri Deish, both important Talmidei Chachamim, came down on the side of mechitza as a separation and a reminder to conduct oneself appropriately, which includes not looking in certain ways, not going out of one's way to look at and examine how women look by the men, but all that's needed is a mechitza that creates that reminder and that sense of it. For Moshe Feinstein, that's at the height of their shoulders, it's about five feet. For we learn not just the Saba Rebbe, but all Hungarian Rabbanim, and then we all learn even in the 1990s for the Tzitzel Yezer, it's got to be taller. The idea should be that the men won't see the women even when they're standing up, and that would be around 5'3", 5'4", 5'5", whatever it would be. Then the question would be also, to what extent, if the men can't see the women when they're standing, but the women don't have machitza that's only, from their perspective, 4 feet tall, let's say. Right? Let's say the women were high enough up that if from their side, 4 feet was enough that the men's angle meant they couldn't see it, that would seem to be good enough for all sides. But that's a whole different set of discussions. In any case, I have like 5 minutes left, and I wanted to get into one other tshuva to go, which goes in the exact opposite direction. I'll do it fairly briefly, but in the opposite direction in terms of, this is a tshuva, the mechitza is an issue about wanting to make sure that men and women stay appropriately separate. Right now I found a tshuva from the 21st of Kislev, from Tufshin Chaf, from 1959. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein in Choshen Mishpat, which is odd because you might have thought it's about mikveh issues. So you would have thought it would be in Yoredeya, but it's in Choshen Mishpat because it's about money issues. Because the question is, it's Choshen Mishpat Aleph Membet 142. How do you know, he says, that if a community has limited funds, they have to build a mikveh before they build a shul? So he says the answer is it's obvious and it's clear, because if you don't have a mikveh in town, it leads to people not having children as much as the other would have, and it leads to them not being living together as husband and wife, which creates shalom, which creates peace, fosters peace between the husband and wife. And any one of those factors, having children at the bare mitzvah of period of rivia, of you have to have, man has to have a daughter and a son and a daughter, a daughter and a son. And beyond that, a man is supposed to have children even beyond that, just for the sake of populating the world. How many is a different discussion. But also there's three issues Rosh Hashanah's name. There's the basic mitzvah. There's the additional rabbinic idea based on Tanakh that we have to have children in general. And there's that husbands and wives, when they live together as husband and wife, it fosters an improvement in the relationship. So all of those factors make it clear that a mikveh is very, very important. Not only that, you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah to build a mikveh. So if you're allowed to sell the Sefer Torah, which is such a serious and important item, certainly you can. You won't build a Beit HaKnesset because of that. Before building a shul, you'll build the mikveh. Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that the Beit Shmuel rules that if somebody doesn't have a wife, but he's already fulfilled period of rivia, he's already had a son and a daughter. Let's say, his first wife sadly passes away. He's not married, but he already had a son. He's filled that mitzvah. Nonetheless, he can sell a Sefer Torah for finding a new wife, because the idea of living, of people being married and having spouses in their lives is such an important idea that Allah allows selling a Sefer Torah for it. So if that's true for getting married, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, that's all the more so for mikveh, because that's not only for one man and woman to be able to get married, it's for all the women in town with their husbands to be able to get married. So he says, even if you can go, far away, there was a time actually my parents told me many, many years ago that when they lived in Washington, the mikveh in Washington, the town was in a bad neighborhood of town, and they very often used to drive to Baltimore instead of going to the bad area of town before they built the new mikveh. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying, even if you can go far away, that only works for during the week, and there are women who can't, and for whom it's difficult to, and then they might delay their meeting if it's an hour drive to the mikveh. So it could be that come Tuesday night, when it's the woman's night to go to the mikveh, they can't put it together to go out an hour drive each way. So they'll wait till Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. Moshe Feinstein says, no, that's not right, because you're separating husbands and wives from each other. And he says it also Shabbos and Yom Tov, right? If the night for a woman to go to mikveh will be a Friday night or a Yom Tov night, then they can't be able to drive the hour to it. And again, you're going to stop them from having children, but But from living together is really what he's saying. From being able to have that relationship. And then Chalkei Machlokes thought that just what happens to men when they are denied or when they don't have the ability to have an outlet for their sexual energies, the Chalkei Machlokes said that itself is good enough to allow Salik Sefer Torah. So Moshe Feinstein says the same thing here. If the man is going to be delayed, if the wife's not going to go to mikvah, they're going to be delayed in being able to live together. So that's good enough to be a problem. So all of these issues make it very clear that you should build a mikvah first. But to sell an actual shul that's already built, so he thinks you theoretically should be allowed to, because you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah, but there's an element in which it's more serious than a Sefer Torah, because it's paskin than Shulchan Aruch, that if you've collected money for a shul, you can use it for other mitzvah purposes. Even if you've collected the actual materials, you might sell them, especially for something like Pidyon Shvuyim, for redeeming people who are captives. But even if you redeem people who are captives, if they've already built this shul, the other Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't do it, you just raise new money from the community, because a built shul you don't, that's based on the idea that people don't sell their houses, their residences. So a shul, once built, becomes like the community's residence, and you don't sell it. But he says, if you really have no way other way to get the money, then you have to sell the shul as well to build the mikvah. So obviously then, you'd build the mikvah first. So that's an important example. Oh, I'm sorry, one last example that I think is very beautiful, and therefore I wanted to make sure to include, even though I'm a little bit over my time already. The Gemara in Nedarim, Daf Samach Vav Amid Bet, speaks about a situation where a man and his wife got into an argument, and the man says, listen, you can't, and this is a Nedarim question, we should try to very much avoid making Nedarim, making oaths and vows. Man says to his wife, listen, you can't get any benefit from me, which basically means they're going to have to end the marriage. However, they're going to have to separate from each other if he sticks with this neder. He says, you can't get any benefit from me until you get Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon to taste this dish. So they're having some fight. Maybe he says it's too salty. She says not too salty. It's some stupid thing, right? Fights are very often stupid, silly, unfortunately, we say things that if we were thinking clearly, we wouldn't say. So this man says, until you get them to taste it. Too salty. He thinks it's too salty. He says, it's fine. He says, you know, take it to them. And you can't get any benefit from it until you take it to them. So Rabbi Yehuda tastes it. Whatever it says, the point is that once he's tasted it, then the nether doesn't come into play and she can stay married to her husband. And Rabbi Shimon refuses to. He thought that, unfortunately, if people mistreat Talmid Chacham and make them, you know, make use of them in their silly family arguments, then it's going to lead to a devaluation of the honor of Torah scholars. He felt it was his responsibility to stand up for that, to make sure that people don't get used to the idea of taking these kinds of oaths. But from Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, he thought that you see in the Torah that when a woman is suspected of being a sota, Hashem lets his name, his sanctified name, be erased as part of the sota ceremony. Rabbi Yehuda thinks that's not to check her and get rid of her. It's to help the husband and wife get back together and for the husband to realize she didn't actually commit adultery. If Hashem will let his name be destroyed for these purposes, all the more so that he should forego his honor a little bit. So Moshe Feinstein says that's another proof that keeping husbands and wives together and letting them have positive relations with each other is such an important value that clearly a mikvah outweighs or overcomes any ideal we have of building a shul. So therefore, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the 21st of Kislev of 1959, says it's clear to him that you build a mikvah before you build a shul. He doesn't talk about it at all, but I would throw in, as I were thinking about it, that might also imply that you want to make sure your mikvah is at least as nice as your shul, because you want the mikvah to be a place that women are going to use so they'll feel comfortable. Meaning if the women say, yeah, we built a mikvah, but I'm not going there. I'm going to drive an hour because that's where the nicer mikvah is. You run into many of the same issues. So mechitzah is an example of keeping men and women apart. Mikvah is an example of keeping men and women together. We see that in each case, Rav Moshe Feinstein, one sometimes feels the need, halacha requires us to keep them apart. For the tzitzit are even more apart by not even seeing each other. But then you also have on the 21st of Kislev an example of trying to make sure that husbands and wives get together and stay together by making sure we have a mikvah to facilitate their positive marital relationships. And those are some responsums for the day of the 21st of Kislev. Have a great day.